One, two, three, that counts us in Tucson. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice on this lovely Tuesday, September 10th. This is the odd part of the year where we as Tucsonans celebrate the high 90s as a cold streak in town, but we've made it and fall is approaching. You can kind of smell it in the hot, humid end of monsoon air we have going on. I'm your host, Tucson, Zach Yenser, of this show where daily we talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And I'm excited to not be just spending a few minutes, but the whole hour with my guest in studio, Diana Alarcon, the Tucson Department of Transportation Director here in our city. Let's jump into it. We've got a lot to cover. Actually put on my social media, hey, you know, I get, and I really am grateful for the whole hour. It really means a lot. I said, I've got her for an hour. What do you want to know? What do you want to talk about? So our listeners helped us create this show today. Great way to kind of...
I'm so excited about that. That's wonderful.
And of course, I had some themes that I wanted to talk with you about as well.
Hopefully we can get it all in the hour.
I hope so. That is the voice of Diana Alarcon. So let me redeem myself, Diana, because I got here with just a minute or two to spare. And I got to tell you why it happened, because it's funny. And this is when you ever feel like you're in a video game, somebody else is playing. It's all transportation related. So. Okay.
Is this your video game or my video game?
Well, it's my video game. I think you'll be spared. But the quick story is my wife left this morning for a little trip away with some family and took our lanyard with our gate key on it.
Oh, dear.
And she couldn't find the spare key, which meant this morning I couldn't find the spare key. So I've got these two beautiful vehicles I can't pull out of my driveway because I can't unlock my gate to get you, right? So I find this out at 7:25 in the morning. I spent an hour trying to find that dang key. So I go, you know what? I'm at the end of my time. I'm going to call an Uber. So, right, this is transportation related.
Right.
It's even though I have the privilege of taking an Uber, not everybody has, you know, a car that they have
Correct.
Access to. So, transportation related. So, great conversation with the Uber guy. We go up 22nd. Bad idea, Tucson. This is not Diana's fault or TDOT's fault or anybody's fault. Positive story. Don't take 22nd at a certain time of day because when the train crosses 22nd, that's the slowest point of its travel. So, it's 8:50, right?
Oh, no.
It's 8:50, and I'm at 22nd, about three-quarters of a mile is that west of Keno. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, I hope we're going to make it. I hope we're going to make it. I hope we're going to make it. So between cars, Uber, and the train, I'm like, you know what? We're having a transportation-focused show today. This is the only way that it could have happened. Diana Alarcon, help us.
So next time you have to try taking the transit system and use the buses and see if you have better luck.
Well, you know what? If I had gotten on the bus when I lost my key, I'd have still been here at about the same amount of time and I would have saved myself an hour looking. But anyway, so we're here.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm glad you made it.
Yes. So a few things that I know our listeners want to talk about. Would love to talk about the e-scooter program that is launching.
Yes.
And would love to get more details around that. We got a lot of questions on what stuff makes up our streets and why is our weather so hard on it? And if you have any thoughts on that. And then within the last week, I've also gotten asked about, hey, what's Tucson's plans for bus rapid transit? Are we going to have bus rapid transit light? Is it going to be real full-on BRT? And I said, you know what? Crazy you ask, because I have Diana Alarcon in the studio. So those are some themes. We've got about 6-7 minutes before our first break. What is the department up to? What are you guys excited about? What's happening over in your neck of the woods?
So the last time I was here, I think I had a chance to mention about our mobility master plan program. We actually have selected a consultant, and we're kicking them off, and they will actually be coming in to visit us toward the end of September, maybe the beginning of October. We haven't confirmed the dates. And I'm really excited about this because this will be their first exposure to the city as well as our first exposure to them. And we're going to be able to have our kickoff meeting with our new coordinating, Complete Street Coordinating Council with the consultants. Super. And that's really going to allow us an opportunity to start having the conversation with the community as a whole about what we want our balanced transportation system to look and feel like for all modes. So we'll right. focus in on the pedestrian, we'll focus in on the bicycles, we'll also focus in on the vehicular traffic, we'll focus in on our transit, we'll also focus on what we want to do with the streetcar, how we would like to expand it. We're also going to pull in and have a conversation about the freight. I think it's important that we do have the conversation about the trains and how they operate within the city, how that fits into the whole transportation system. And I don't want to leave the planes out either, because they play a very important economic role in our city of bringing visitors, guests, businesses, materials, goods to the city. So we need to be pulling all that in and looking at that whole big picture of how we move everything. So I'm really excited. Because this is something that we've been working on for the past few months, and we're actually kicking off.
Wow.
So that's going to be very exciting, and we'll actually start visiting everybody in the community. We plan on spending the next 6 to 8 months really going out to the community and hearing the community to understand what it is everybody's envisioning and seeing, and then pulling that all together so that we create a very balanced transportation system. From that, we'll get a list of projects. We'll figure out how to prioritize those projects and put together a 25-year plan that will kind of be our roadmap, and every pun intended with that, on how we're going to build that transportation system. So I'm actually really excited because this is something we've been planning, and we're actually now kicking it off. So it's going to be fun.
Excellent.
Yes.
So you mentioned something that I wanted to clarify and go back to real quick. You talked about a lot of different modes of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, I think, the conversation revolves around roads and cars, but you talked about planes, you talked about freight, you talked about multimodal. Is that really the comprehensive scope of the department, all those things
yes.
together?
Yes. You cannot depend on just one mode of transportation. I mean, let's be realistic. In the United States, we've all become very dependent on cars. And how well do you think that has worked for us? I mean, just yours.
Well, it didn't work well for me today.
Exactly. Not everybody has that experience, but it's not working great. But it is something that's going to be with us. And vehicular travel is not going to go anywhere. It may change. So, you know, there's a lot of conversation around autonomous vehicles and shared mobility in vehicles. And I do feel that there is a different future and a different avenue for that as we move forward in the next decade. But it's going to take time to get there. So we like our cars. We use our cars. But we also need to have that balanced system for those other choices to happen. If you do, we've worked very hard as a community, as a country, to try to build safe roads so that people travel safely in cars. We need to do the same thing for the other modes so that people will feel comfortable using those other modes and make those different choices. You can't depend just on the car. It takes all the different transportation components to have success and to have balance. And if you look at the cities that are very thriving and what people consider walkable, livable cities, they have a balance of around all modes. They have the transit side, they have the vehicular side, they have the pedestrian side, they have the bicycle side, they have all of that, and it's well balanced so that folks can make those alternative choices if they choose so. And a lot of people want to. They just do not feel comfortable or safe doing it. So we want to create those environments for everyone, as well as keeping it also safe for those folks that still want to use their cars. We don't want to take that off, but we want to keep a balance for everybody.
Absolutely. The Living Streets, or the Complete Streets
mm-hmm.
Ordinance kind of policy that was put in place within the last year.
Right.
I believe last time we were on the air together, just to wrap up this first part here, I think you shared that your philosophy, right, the Complete Streets idea is whether you're 8 or 80, can you get around? Can you move around the city? But your philosophy is not every square inch of the city is going to have the same Complete Streets look. And
correct.
I think a lot of people would be concerned about that as we apply this, that, you know, is your highway underpass going to look like your neighborhood street? And if I recall correctly, and clarify if I'm wrong, your point of view is no, there's some best use variables in different parts of the city, and your job is to make sure that the ordinance makes sense in the best way possible for each different type of transportation needed in the area where it's at.
Correct. So when you talk about complete streets, it's about what modes you decide to put on that street are built so that it's safe for that mode movement. So if you're going to put a bicycle lane on that street, make it a protected bicycle lane so that the bicyclist is safe. And you may not want to put that next to the railroad tracks, or you may want to because you can have enough division. So it's not about every mode fitting on a street, because that's not realistic and that's not balanced. And we do not have enough asphalt to do that. It's figuring out how you want your networks to connect. And when you build it, you're building it safe for that mode. So that's very important. And people think we're going to just put every mode on every street. And that's not very realistic. One, it's not affordable. It's not sustainable. And we just do not have enough right-of-way to actually get that done.
Diana Alarcon, the director of the Tucson Department of Transportation, I will put this out on the air because it's genuine. I appreciate your vision, but also your pragmatism.
Oh, thank you.
And I often find that a lot of people involved in cities, not just Tucson, right, either have one or the other. And I think it's hard to find both. So I'm going to go out on a limb and appreciate you for that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And we have Diana Alarcon on the air for the rest of the hour. When we come back, the hot topic, I got to tell you, the e-scooter program set to start on the 12th. Let's dedicate at least part of the next segment to that. And there's so much more to come. We have so much to talk about here in Tucson. Tucson, don't go away. E-scooters start September 12th, 2 days. We're going to talk about it here with Diana Alarcon. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, and I'm joined in studio by Diana Alarcon, the director of the Tucson Department of Transportation, and we have her and her team here for an hour to talk about some of the key transportation issues. In fact, her staff has been generous enough to carve out a conversation like this every other month, and so we get these regular check-ins. And Tucson, part of the reason Diana Alarcon wanted to be on the air is because of the opportunity to interact with you on our live lines and to, as she's able, if she's able at this point in time, to answer the questions that you may have. 790-2040 is the live line number you can use to engage in the conversation yourself. In the meantime, e-scooters, 2 days, September 12th. I would imagine most of my listeners know what's going on, but if you can give the quick synopsis, and then we can get into some of the details, some of the opportunities, some of the concerns, what you guys are working on to mitigate anything that I know you've thought about ahead of time. So, quick synopsis.
So, we actually have two companies that we're going to be kicking off the e-scooter program with beginning this Thursday. It is Bird and Razor. We're excited to welcome to the city. It is a pilot. This is a 6-month pilot. So we will be watching very closely how it's what's happening, what's going on, any concerns that arise through it. We've worked very closely with the University of Arizona to actually put a geofence. So for those students out there that might be listening, you cannot, I repeat, cannot take the e-scooters onto the University of Arizona property.
I mean, you can try, but it'll peter out in quarter of a mile.
And you might get a penalty.
So don't do it.
So don't do it. Save your mom and dad the heartache so it doesn't hit the credit card and they kind of go upset because you've gone in the territory. There's actually been signs installed that say no electric scooters allowed. And so we ask that you be respectful of the signage that's up. Other than that, it's allowed. Each vendor is bringing 500 scooters. Okay. They have an opportunity to bring an additional 250 scooters in areas that are where there is more of a need.
An opportunity zone, exactly.
And that is a conversation that's been in part of the setup as well. So at the most, we're going to have 1,500 at any time. That's it, 1,500 scooters in the city. So we do feel comfortable because it's a different controlled environment. In the past, a lot of the horror stories that folks have read about, they've just come in and have set up 5,000 to 10,000 scooters in cities, which have been very difficult for cities to manage. And we've been very fortunate that we have been able to actually put some of these criteria in place to have a better controlled environment, to really make sure that we're creating a safe environment, to evaluate how this additional new mode will work and how it will collaborate with all the different modes that are currently already in place.
Right.
So e-scooters should be ridden on the in the bike lanes. You should not be on the sidewalk with them. They are actually treated like a bicycle, and that's how you should actually ride them. So you have to follow the rules of the road. Stop at stop signs, yield to yield signs. If you're at a light, you must, and it's red, you must stop. You can't go through. You can't treat yourself like a pedestrian. You're actually considered a bicycle or in that same, you know, realm. So you have to follow those roads, road rules. And a bicyclist, if you're on your bike, you follow the rules of the road, just like you would behind a wheel of a car. So that's what we're looking for folks to do. And we want people to be safe. It does have a speed restriction, so it's only going to go up to a certain mile, and it won't go any faster than that.
Okay.
We've actually put that on that because we don't want folks to be out there doing crazy things.
What's that number?
I think we're setting it at 20 miles per hour or 15. 15 miles per hour.
15.
Which I'm much happier with.
Yes.
We do also ask if you are making the choice to ride the e-scooter that you wear a helmet. You know, I mean, the e-scooter moves pretty fast. 15 miles per hour is pretty fast. And if you hit, you know, something, you could, and you get thrown and you hit your head, you can be seriously hurt. So we are asking that if you make the choice to do the e-scooter that you actually wear a helmet and, you know, take the proper safety precautions. Be very respectful of the road and the rules of the road.
So I think I was actually in that city council meeting. And if I recall, it was Councilman Steve Kozacik who pushed for a 6-month time frame. I don't hear that number talked about enough, and it's kind of like take the puppy home if you and try it. If you like it, keep it. If you don't, send it back. And I think that's the one comfortable thing about this is, you know, is 6 months. Some of the concerns that I have heard, and certainly there's a couple council members in particular that are not excited about this at all, and that's public. I mean, that's, they've been on this station a lot talking about it, so it's out there. One of the concerns is that these are dockless. Am I correct in that?
So,
and they're smartphone app controlled. You sign on, you drive it around, and then you park it. And that's the optimal situation. A lot of realists / pragmatists maybe have said that, you know, the parking's going to be clunky, and where do you leave these when they're done? And are they going to end up in a dumpster somewhere? And are there horror stories to be careful of, or is it overhyped? Diane Alarcon, Department of Transportation Director here in Tucson.
I'm hoping, because we've limited the number of scooters that we're allowing in the city, that we won't be on that hype end, that we'll actually have some more realistic. I would be unrealistic if I said we weren't going to have some scenarios that would occur. But we've put some things into check with the current companies that are coming in. And Razor and Bird have been excellent in working with us. So the app, when they load it up, actually is also GPSing where that bicycle's moving or the scooter's moving. If they leave it somewhere, so we have identified parking areas that are on the app for the scooters throughout the city. So the app will actually encourage folks to go to that parking area. If someone leaves it outside that area, they have 2 hours to pick it up. So there may be some inconvenience, but we did put some balances in to kind of correct that. And if they do not pick it up in 2 hours, then we actually have the right to pick it up, and then they actually get fined. So there's an incentive in them for them to also do the right thing. And then they're set it up on their app where they get their folks that are their renters to do the right thing. So we've tried to be very strategic in establishing this pilot program to put some of these safety mechanisms in place.
Right.
And I have to, you know, just kudos to my staff. They've just been excellent about really thinking through, really listening to what the concerns have been in other cities, and then figuring out and evaluating how we can put some of those steps in place so we do not have the same scenarios. I think we'll have one or two. I always have, you know, you always have individuals that do not behave. Let's just say that. I mean, we all do it. I mean, from time to time, we all try to take shortcuts, or we try to do something a little bit different. We're always going to have that. I hope people will behave correctly. I hope people will be respectful of everybody on the road and the different modes that they're using. So we don't have a scenario that's way out there on the limb. But right. if we do, we've put mechanisms in place to be able to react quickly.
Right.
So I'm really proud of the team. They've done a great job.
Diana Alarcon, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. I guess my final question would be on this. It seems like cities around the country have mixed reviews of e-scooter programs, and some have implemented them and found out, man, these things are kind of faddish. And within the 6 month period, it's kind of like, meh, we're kind of done with them as a community. That may or may not be Tucson's story, but definitely when you look around, that's a component of what the end result might be. If everything goes really well, what was your sense from the council of trying this program in Tucson? Why bring e-scooters to Tucson? If everything goes well, what's the best possible result?
Well, you know, e-scooters are a solution for that first and last mile. So if you think of in that sense, as we build out that transportation system, they provide a tool to get to that first and last mile. And if you're using that mode correctly, it is a great win. So where communities have been able to really have the scooter program be that first and last mile, as our To-Go, you know, bike sharing program is also a first and last mile alternative choice. This is another one. And you want to give folks as many alternative choices as they can so that they will make those, so that they will use those other modes of transportation and not always be dependent on the car. And this is a great resource for us to actually be doing that.
You know, and I was kind of scrolling around. It might have been the Department of Transportation page, but there's always been a huge equity focus of this project as well.
Correct.
That it's a mode of transportation for those who may not have access to even public transit to the larger scale. So I thought that was an interesting angle on this as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty front and center, I would say, from the beginning.
Yes. And I think it is. I mean, this is not a huge cost to actually, and again, it really focuses in on that first and last mile. In Portland, they actually did a study, and they actually found that the e-scooter did replace some vehicular miles traveled. So it also helped with that congestion issue mm-hmm. as well. So I think the 6 month trial is going to give us an opportunity to really take a good look at it. We've, again, partnered with U of A, not only in where the scooters can go, but also in helping us evaluate, did we get the best use of the scooters as part of our transportation system?
I'm looking forward to talking more about this it's going to be November.
Yes.
I think we'll know. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour break. Actually, we've been given a gift. We get to keep going.
Because, oh, wonderful.
Because there's not enough time as we start. So let's shift topics a little bit. 790-2042. So we'll keep the phone lines open. If you have a question, want to circle back to the e-scooter program, we'll keep the lines open for that question.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask a little bit more of it could be a near-term question, Diana Alarcon, Department of Transportation Director. Maybe it's a little further term. You have experience in multimodal transportation that I think is really valuable to the city. You've been in places that are maybe a little further ahead than Tucson. I've gotten this question lately, bus rapid transit.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that there is some kind of space that is specifically designed for buses. So the buses aren't necessarily faster. They just are faster because they're not in traffic.
Correct.
And you kind of have a bus rapid transit light model, and then you can do full on, you know, stations and ramps and things like that. What's your pragmatic goal for transit like that? Is Tucson built for BRT light? Can we get BRT full? Where are we going, if you're at liberty to explain?
I think we need to consider both. I want to keep both on the table and have the conversation. And I think, you know, part of the planning that we're doing in collaboration with Pima County of Government's PAG and through also RTA is that opportunity to move toward a bus rapid transit consideration. I think we have great bones, and we just need to continue to expand our transit network system. We do have a frequency transit network system now that is actually very effective and has great ridership, and we continue to see improvements on that frequency network. Our biggest challenge is dollars. I mean, you know, right now we operate the system mainly Monday through Friday, and if you really want to have a successful transit system, you need to be 7 days a week. And we're not. Mm. So transit is really about being convenient and reliable. And if you look at doing one set Monday through Friday and then doing another operation on Saturday and Sunday, you don't have the convenience and the reliability. So we really want to look at, you know, over the next few years of looking how we can change that, move into that type, because I think that's the first step. And then we can talk about taking some of those frequency routes and creating BRTs, whether they're full-on or light, mm-hmm. so that we can have them move more efficiently. As well, so more conveniently. So you need to build that. So we have great bones, and we need to start building off of that. So mm-hmm. that's going to be our challenge, and funding's also a big challenge because, you know, transportation has never, ever paid for itself. It's always been subsidized, whether it's roadways.
I was going to ask you.
Whether it's transit, whether it's a rail system, you name it, it's always had some sort of subsidy supporting it to be able to allow that transportation element to move forward. So it's never paid for itself. So we have to really think about the efficiencies in the transportation operations that we're doing, as well as what's that convenient and that reliability that we can provide at the same time to encourage those different uses.
That's good. We'll circle back on that in just a minute. We have a couple of callers that want to chat with you. We have Chuck called 790-2040 to join our conversation with Diana Alarcon. Chuck, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes, ma'am. In your long-term vision for the transportation system here in Tucson, I did not hear you talk about the possibility of an east-west freeway. Why?
Well, actually, it is going to be part of our mobility master plan study. A few months back, our council actually asked us to look into how we can do that. And there is conversation of how we can continue golf links and build on that. So we have partnered with, there was a study that was actually done by ADOT a few years back. So we've actually have reinitiated with the consultant that did that study. They're actually bringing that study back up. We're going to freshen it up and look at what would be the next steps to continue that conversation of creating that east-west highway link. So it actually is very much on the table and in the forefront, and we're very excited that council supported that, and we are moving that forward. So by all means, it is part of our mobility master plan, and it's part of looking at, again, the safest way to move folks efficiently throughout the city by all modes, including the vehicular movement.
Great to hear. You know, I often say the decisions we make in the next 5 or 10 years will impact our next 50. We've tried so many times to get east-west. It's failed every time. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of moment Tucson is in. We have Greg on our live line. He called 790-2040 to jump in the conversation. Greg, I appreciate you calling in. You are on the air with Diana Alarcon.
Thank you. I'm calling about a small, specific thing. There is a study done on road diet between Euclid and Country Club on 6th Street. Is that going anywhere?
So forgive me here, Greg, and thank you for calling. I'm 9 months into the job, and I haven't quite learned what all has been in the works. That has not come across my desk, so I can't speak specifically to where it is going anywhere or not going anywhere. But I tell you what, I will make a note of it, and when I come back, I will actually bring that up, and we'll talk about that a little bit further. So
there was a program back in before 9/11, 2001, of taking that whole corridor all the way to Wilmot and putting bike lanes in and such.
And Greg, what are your feelings of that?
I think it'd be great.
Okay.
I think it makes perfect sense. Once Broadway and Speedway are built up the way you want, that could be brought down and made like, I don't know, a comparison would be maybe Tucson Boulevard or Glen or Pima.
Yeah, bring it back to a local street because it actually cuts through a neighborhood.
it does cut through neighborhoods.
Yes, sir.
Make it, to use an overused word, vibrant and kind of human scaled.
Right. Well, let me put that on my list, and I will dig in and do a little bit of information and digging, and then I'll bring that back when I come back in the next conversation. How's that sound?
Thanks. It sounds like you're doing a great job. I appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate you taking time to call in and share your thoughts with us.
Goodbye.
Greg,
goodbye, sir.
Greg, thanks for your call. And if I didn't agree, I wouldn't say anything on the air, but I agree with Greg. I think you're doing a great job. And Greg, by the way, Diana is joined by some of her team from the department here. And so when Diana said it's going on the list, it just went on the list. I just watched it happen. And this is a pretty cool experience, Tucson, that in real time, as you're calling in, asking questions, bringing things to the table, notes are being made. This is really cool at the moment. This is live local talk in action. It's pretty darn cool. And I really appreciate your time.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm going to toot a horn big time here because, you know, not only does Tucson have great bones for building a transportation system, but Tucson has a great transportation team. There are so many folks on the team that are passionate and dedicated and are out there and giving their 100% every single day. And, you know, I'm lucky and I'm grateful because these folks, they want to make a difference in everybody's life. And as the leader of this type of a department, you can't be in a better situation. So, I mean, my folks are fantastic. And I have to toot that horn. I mean, they work really hard. And sometimes we take a beating, but they're out there and they're putting their best foot forward every day. And they're doing their best to improve the quality of life of the residents, the visitors, and the guests of this city.
Yeah, that's a good word. And again, this comes from experience because I'm lucky enough to not just talk about this stuff on the air. I actually get to get my hands into things and work on things. I think there's not enough conversation that separates the work and visioning and policymaking, good or bad, of the council and the nitty-gritty data work of city staff. And I think if more people knew the good work that city staff are doing, even just apart from the day-to-day politicking that, you know, the elected officials have to go through. It's a nuanced kind of city conversation that I don't hear had enough. And I've always had really, I've yet to have a bad experience. I don't know, it'll happen someday, but I've yet to have a bad experience with city staff. Diana Alarcon, I had a listener question related to bus rapid transit and overall strategic planning. I mean, Tucson on the high side is anticipated to, in the metro area, expand by about 33% by 2050. And so we're talking about all these ways to get people around in a city, especially if we bomb the east-west conversation again and tank that one. This is going to be all the more important. But a question about Uber, Lyft, GoPuff, Amazon, so many ways for people to get around. Is bus, streetcar, light rail, is this still necessary? Still a piece of the puzzle? Or have we moved on from that conversation?
So, you know, it's funny because when Uber and Lyft came around, everyone said, oh, this is the fix. This is going to be the win. And I have always looked at Uber and Lyft and Amazon and all of those. And I don't want to throw out taxis either. I want to include them because they're part of that group.
Good call. Yeah.
They play a very important role. But they're one piece of a transportation system. I go back to, you have to have a balanced transportation system. You can't have one of everything. You have to have everything available. The reality is, if we depended strictly on cars, we would not be able to move today. If we didn't have those alternative choices today of using bus, of using the streetcar, of riding our bikes, of walking, traffic congestion would be so much more worse than it is today. So we have to have that balance with all of it. So Uber and Lyft, to me, is part of the solution to fixing your total transportation system. And I go back to the Mobility Master Plan, and I think when I started, I said, the Mobility Master Plan is about building that balanced transportation system for this city, and that will also allow that growth to happen in a balanced way. So we do not have one too many of the one element or of the other. It's balanced so that good choices can be made, those choices are safe, they're available, they're convenient, and they're reliable. and that we don't put people in a position where they can't move and they're stuck, where Uber and Lyft continues to be a value as well as taxi cabs, because I don't want to take them out of the marketplace either. They all play that very essential role of being part of the overall transportation system.
We're with Diana Alarcon on the air here on 1030 The Voice. She's the director of the Tucson Department of Transportation. I think we're going to go to the phone lines one last time before the break. I hear so much about transportation getting around on the air, so it's a real it's a real gift, and I really mean that, to have your time. We're going to talk a lot about roads in our final segment, but in a positive way, in a good way, because I had some non-whiny questions asked of just what are our streets made of and how do we keep them preserved longer and all that good stuff. We have Al on our live line to finish up this segment. He called 790-2040 to be on the conversation with Diana Alarcon. By the way, our phone lines today are sponsored by Why I Love Where I Live, a local social media movement and retail location that helps people to get engaged with their community. They sponsor our live line every Tuesday here on the show. Al, you're on the line. Go ahead.
I have a question. It seems like all your policies and stuff for the people downtown, the people U of A, the people that work in offices, but what about the people that need their vehicles to get around town in a timely manner to do services? I mean, I can't hop on the bus with my equipment and go to somebody's town or ride a scooter or something. I don't understand. It's nice for all those people, but what about all the other people?
Al, I appreciate your question. I actually hear this a lot. Diana Alarcon, go ahead. Let's cover this before we go to a break.
So I agree with you, Al, and thank you for calling in. It is about that balanced transportation system, because many folks may not have the opportunity to make those other choices. And so we want to make sure that we are building safe roads so that cars move safely, and we want to create those proper movements. So the gentleman who called in earlier about 6th Street, you know, and he kind of laid it out very well. When you get Broadway where it can move cars efficiently and effectively in an appropriate time manner, and Speedway in an efficient, effective manner, then maybe we look at 6. And again, it goes back to complete street. It's about building that balance network on each road with the proper mode. Not every road should have a bicycle lane. Not every road should be built for the pedestrian. Not every road should be built for the car, for that matter. But if we're going to put the car as the priority on that road, we need to develop the proper ways for that car to move safely and effectively. And that means looking at our traffic signals. How can we better systematically time our signals so that it's more efficient to move down the road and make those choices? So it's not only building highways, but it's also looking at that transportation traffic signal transportation element and getting that balanced with moving cars, whether it's north, south, east, or west. So we are not taking the car out of the conversation with the Mobility Master Plan. It is as much in the forefront as all the other modes are. And again, it's about building that balanced transportation system. So I appreciate your call. And yes, sir, we have not forgotten about you. And we want to make sure we're still creating those safe roads for you to move efficiently on.
We are rapidly moving through the hour with Diana Alarcon. Greg and Chuck and Al have called 790-2040, our Why I Love Where I Live live line. If you're on the line, we'll get back to you after our break, our last break here of the hour. So don't go away. We're going to talk about some road stuff as well with the Tucson Department of Transportation director when we return. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome on back to the show. We've had so many of you call in to leave or ask a question of our guest today in studio. We're going to get right into it because our time is running out quickly, which is crazy. We're with Tucson Department Transportation Director Diana Alarcon, and our live line today is sponsored by Why I Love Where I Live. Go check out their retail location over at the Mercado San Agustin Annex. It's a great spot, and they do good work helping people appreciate what we do have going on in Tucson. I appreciate them very much. They sponsor our live line. Let's see, do we still have a caller on our line? They called Why I Love Where I Live live line. Let's go ahead and go to our caller on line 3. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Got a question on the e-scooter bit. When I visit like the Arlington and D.C. area, there's a big problem with e-scooters littering the sidewalk and all that. Is there a way to curtail that? I know it's not really the e-scooter producers or the company's fault. It's people that are inconsiderate, just leave them laying around. Is there a provision on how to set that to make those folks using that more responsible?
Yes, sir, and thank you for asking that question. I think one of the things, two things that we're doing that's going to help with hopefully that not being an issue for us here. One is we're limiting the number of scooters that we're allowing in the city. And two, we've actually have already as part of the program established areas in which the vehicles are to be parked. So we're hoping that because we've done that and we've been working very closely with Bird and Razor on defining those areas and them actually geo-mapping it so people know to go to them, we're hoping that we will deter folks from littering the sidewalk with e-scooters. But as I had mentioned earlier, if that was to happen, we actually have a two-hour window that we require both Bird and Razor to respond to and remove the scooter. If not, we will actually be doing it ourselves, and they will actually receive a fine. So we feel we've put some mechanisms in place. We're hoping for a successful turnout, and when I come back, I'll have more to talk about how the pilot's going, and we're hoping that some of those safety measures and checks that we put into place will actually produce a better outcome than some cities in the past have experienced.
Super. You had some, we like to get a little nitty gritty on the show and actually talk policy details, things that impact the questions that we often ask. You mentioned, and let's maybe this can lead into quickly our Parks and Connections bond and maybe mm-hmm. some funding issues. But in terms of roads, especially when the monsoon hits, it seems like the pothole repairs don't last as quickly. Some roads get hit harder than others. I definitely got those questions. Can you speak briefly to some of the dynamics that impact how our roads stay up over time?
So our roads, actually, many decades ago, way back, I want to say probably in the 40s and 50s, a decision was made by whoever was here in the city at that time because the monsoons were short and the rains didn't last long. They actually said, it's okay, we're going to let the water run on the road. And that actually causes the asphalt to deteriorate even quickly. Not just the asphalt, but it also deteriorates the base. So where you see patching of potholes, they are done correctly. They're done to the appropriate criteria and standards. But that water, it just gets in there and erodes it and chips away. And then with the pressure of the car running over it or a truck or whatever, it just pops it. So it's very challenging for us, and it will continue to be a challenge for us because the water is just, it's Mother Nature, and we have to build a road where the water is not on the roadway. It's actually moving in. Our roadway system, a majority of it, lately we have actually been building in, but we did not build in stormwater system with our roads. We use our roads as our stormwater system. So as we are getting into new projects, we are actually building in stormwater systems so that the water runs underneath the roads and not cool. on the roads. So, but that's very expensive, and it's going to be done with projects as we move forward. And we need to continue to think along that way of actually removing water off the roads. Because if we truly want to be a multimodal city, the water's got to come off the road, not yep. just for the sake of moving the cars and eliminating the issues we're having with potholes,
yep.
but it deteriorates the roadways quickly as well. And so it's reduced the longevity of really the life of that road. Most roads should get 40 years out of them. We're probably getting 26 years, and we actually have some roads in the city that are over 60 years old that need to be replaced. So we have big challenges in front of us, and unfortunately, it requires a lot of dollars to get it done. But we're part of the Mobility Master Plan. We said we had talked about that balanced transportation system. We're going to have, along with it, a balanced network system as well. So that 25-year plan to get our roads up to good condition, to actually have them function so they don't feel like they're alligator skin that you're driving on. It's a little bit smoother service. But there is over, you know, a recent, you know, when I got here, they had actually did a workup and had looked at it, and I had, it was shared with me, we have about $850 million worth of work to bring the roads up to good condition or even fair condition in that matter. Even if we had the $850 million, and by the way, I would just got to thank the community because they did pass Bond 101, which has given us $110 million to do roads. Yep. 40% of that 110 over the 5 years is being spent on the arterial roads. I mean, 60% is on arterial, sorry, and 40% is being spent on local. So we are moving that initiative forward, and that's due to the community saying, hey, get this done. We want it. This is a priority to us, and we are definitely moving it forward and getting it done, and we've had some great successes with that so far, and we'll continue to, you know, plow forward on that. But $110 million is just a small dip in the bucket of the big picture of what we need to do. But if we were successful in getting a check for $850 million to do the roads, and everybody wanted me to go do the roads now, I'd have to shut the city down for 6 months to go do the roads, and that's not economically viable either. So we do need to come up with a game plan. We need to include improving stormwater infrastructure as part of that game plan. We need to start moving the water off the roads so our roads will last 40 years and not shorter. And we need to, and we're going to have to be systematic about it so that it's not affecting our quality of life, that as we have these opportunities, it improves the quality of life, but it's also not affecting our economic development opportunities as well, our vitality to economic growth.
I know we wanted to at least touch on, and I want to end, because you on how people can contact the department to when they announce, when they say, hey, I've got a pothole. Like, you guys have some innovative ways for people to get a hold of you. But the 407 bond helped.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got off of that. Excuse me.
That's okay. Time flies with you, Diana Alarcon. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. 407 passed last year by the voters.
Thank you. Again, thank you, voters. We're excited.
Focused on parks, but also on connections, which has a multimodal component as well.
Right.
Maybe the best way is to say there's an actually beautiful website that people can go and it's interactive, and they can see in their part of Tucson what's getting the money. It's pretty cool.
Right. Actually, and thank you for mentioning that. We actually have put together a great interactive website. You can get to it through going to the city website, and there's actually a link to 407. You can move your mouse to a line, and it'll pop up and tell you the project, what it is, how much money is being invested, and what year it is actually in the program to get done.
It's pretty cool.
So we are trying to find ways to make it simpler for people to get the information. So thank you for bringing that up and allowing me the opportunity to actually act on it a little bit more.
Absolutely.
But I also, you know, want to invite the community. We can't be everywhere at one time. So we actually are asking the community to help us be the eyes and ears out there. So if they see a problem, we're asking, there's two ways to report it. One is you can actually shoot us an email. It goes to t.concerns. Mm-hmm. So T-D-O-T, concerns. With an S at TucsonAZ.gov. And then, or you can call us. And I have two numbers that you can give us a call at.
Great.
And this is to T.Dot Concern as well. And that is 791-3154. And or you can call the director's office, which is 791-4371. And what we do is when we get these requests in, we actually load them into our task order system. It goes up into the system. You'll receive an email that we got your call or we received your email. It's in the work system. We ask that you give us 4 to 6 weeks. Most of the times it's shorter than that, but just depending on the workload and different times, because when monsoon happens, we do end up with a little bit more extra work than normal, so we may get a little bit backlog, but we're trying to expedite things and get it done in an efficient amount of time, and we get out and then get that. So anything that you see, this can be potholes, it can be graffiti, it can be signage replacement, striping that needs to happen on the roadways, it can include cleaning of washes.
Love it.
Everything. Just please shoot it to us, let us know, because we'd like to be everywhere, but it's
for sure.
We're not. So we appreciate it when our neighbors and our visitors give us that opportunity and share it with us. It just helps us get it in the system so we can actually go out and get it corrected.
Diana Alarcon, Tucson Department of Transportation Director, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Answering
thank
questions,
you for having me.
Talking about key topics. This is civic engagement in action, I believe. It really is. So thank you for your time. Tucson, that does it for our Tuesday show. Doug, new show coming up here afterwards. And then Zyra Olivier, key organizer of Sanctuary City Movement on Buckmaster at noon. See you tomorrow, Tucson.